Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, not as always, Mr. Chad Riley is actually out and away spending some time on vacation, so it is myself and Mr. Ride or Die, Spencer Williams.
Hey, what's up?
How's it going, man?
I'm doing pretty well.
It's been a little bit since we've been back on the episode. We've had a couple things going on in personal life. And, of course, as the great Jeff Goldblum once said, life finds a way. So, we're back. And we got a great show in store for you today. So, stick around as we get into our review of Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. Whether you travel by a broom, train, or by a creepy carriage drawn by thestrals, you can always trust that the Filmlosophers podcast is brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. If you're having trouble with your Wingardium Leviosa, get it right, Spence. Get it right. You may learn a bit from our episode. Subscribe to the Filmlosophers on any of your favorite streaming platforms. New lessons drop every Wednesday morning on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom. Spencer, tell them where else they can find us.
Looking for all those fantastic beasts and wondering where to find them? Well, let's talk about that. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Finally, don't let yourself be port-keyed after just a single episode of the podcast. Give our other 136 lessons a try.
Who said Chad is the only one who can do these things? I did pretty darn well. What can I say?
I just never seen the word port-keyed before, so that's interesting.
Well, if you've picked up a Harry Potter book, you know what it would mean, Spencer.
Hey, I picked up all 7 of those books.
7? That's it?
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's another one. There's actually an 8th.
I don't want to talk about that. We do not talk about.
There's literally 3 smaller ones that are in within all that. Yes, we are Potter nerds, and we are excited to talk about Fantastic Beasts: The Crimes of Grindelwald. It's been a long time coming. People have been kind of excited, kind of not excited about whatever's going to be happening with this upcoming sequel, and I think it's plain to see that, you know what, having to have an opportunity to go back to Hogwarts and to be able to re-engage with Albus Dumbledore and kind of see what's going on with Newt Scamander and all that, I think it's pretty fun, even though, I mean, let's just be honest, not many people like yourself read the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them book.
No, it came across as a textbook, so why would I read a textbook for a school I don't go to? It's a very hard thing to deal with.
It sounds like an excuse to me. But before we continue, I'm going to give you a little bit of that official synopsis goodness. In an effort to thwart Grindelwald's plans, Albus Dumbledore, played by Jude Law, enlists his former student, Newt Scamander, who agrees to help unaware of the dangers that lie ahead. Lines are drawn as love and loyalty are tested. What kind of story doesn't go without love and loyalty being tested? It seems like every single storyline nowadays has that.
Yeah, it's kind of an easy fallback.
Even among the truest friends and family in an increasingly divided wizarding world. That was put in by J.K. Rowling. Directed by David Yates, the film stars Eddie Redmayne, Catherine Waterston, Ezra Miller, Alison Siddall, Dan Fogler, Jude Law, and, of course, Jack Sparrow, a.k.a. Johnny Depp. Mm. I don't think he'll be known as anything else other than Jack Sparrow. I really don't think so.
No, because that's kind of one of his more iconic roles.
I don't even know if it's iconic anymore, though. It's just one of those things where it's like, you look at him and It's like that. It's like that one uncle who can do a really great Christopher Walken impersonation, and so He thinks that every time he goes to a party, everybody wants to see Christopher Walken. And so he's like, oh, me and the witch. It's like, that was good about 5 years ago, but yeah, we need to kind of move on.
As a ridiculous of an analogy as that is, I kind of really get that. It's so crazy.
So I don't know, just to kind of like just jump on this for a quick second. Like, I think Johnny Depp kind of hit popularity with this particular character at a very, you know, I don't know, awkward part in his career. And just realize, oh, people like this. I'm going to keep doing it. And I'll go to hospitals and do it. And I'll go to Disneyland and do it. And I'll go everywhere.
He went to hospitals and did this?
He does this at hospitals.
I didn't know that.
A pirate who is drunk on rum visits children's hospitals because they like the character of Jack Sparrow. Do not go to the kidney failure wing. That's all I'm saying. But it's true. We'll talk a little bit more about Johnny Depp and his role as Grindelwald. Quick fact, this is actually the second installment in the Fantastic Beasts film series and the 10th overall Wizarding World franchise, so which pretty much began the whole Harry Potter film series altogether. So in total, you're looking at, like Spencer said, 10 films altogether.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really cool to see how much this franchise has grown from when, like, you had Daniel Radcliffe and you know, all the you know, Emma Watson and all them other people's, you know, starting as little kids, and now you see them all grown as grown adults doing actual other projects. But it kind of makes you feel old too.
No, but seriously, that's like one of the things I hate most about child actors, is that it makes me feel like this withering old man in the corner. It is kind of cool to like see them grow up and like do like, you know, continual acting work. But yeah, it really does like make that clock on everyone's body just like tick super loud.
So as we said, we got a chance to check out the film not actually at a press screening. It was a special screening through Cinemark. So shout out to Cinemark. Kudos. But yeah, it was actually really cool to get a chance to be a part of it and see what was going on and see the film with a lot of other people who were huge Potter fans and fans of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. So as opposed to, I mean, not to say that we don't normally get a chance to sit with fans when we go to press screenings, but usually when we go to press screenings, it's usually with people who are there to critique the film. So they're more quiet, they're more focused, they're more paying attention. You know, the people who are usually making noises and whatnot are shushed profusely. Mostly by me, yes.
Yeah, mostly by you.
But it's in tonight's screening, it was actually really interesting because there was the opportunity of seeing it with people who are so much fans of this franchise that they're willing to make those noises and whatnot and go crazy, and nobody's going to shush them. Like, everybody was completely engaged. So I think that was kind of cool to experience that. That was kind of like seeing you know, some of the films, like when we went to go see, well, when I went to go see like the first, The Force Awakens on an opening night with a bunch of other crazy Star Wars fans. And that was pretty cool and whatnot. Seeing a film pretty much opening on its, you know, opening night is kind of like that. So, we're going to go ahead and jump right into the film. And the first thing, obviously, what we're going to talk about is expectations. Now, here's the thing. We're going to talk about the expectations, but I don't want to just talk about expectations from the last film to this. I want to talk about expectations from what we've experienced as Potter fans, as people who, I'm assuming you've read the books. I'm looking at you, Spencer, not just talking to people listening to the episode.
Right.
I'm expecting that you've read the books, you've seen all the films, and you have a precursory knowledge, at least somewhat, of some of the other pieces of literature, at least aware of them.
Yeah.
And so with that, I want to know what your expectations have been thus far with the Wizarding World up to this point. I'm really putting it out
that's
there.
That's a lot, because pretty much when, you know, the original series ended, I was like, oh, I guess we're done with this. And then later on, it was like Fantastic Beasts are coming. And I was like, wasn't that one book from like Harry's first year? I read that, you know, eventually she made like an actual textbook and it was auctioned off or whatever. But I didn't really know anything about like what was actually going to be happening besides, you know, there's Fantastic Beasts. So by the time the first movie came out, you know, I was cautiously optimistic because that's a really hard turn to do for a series to go from like, oh, it's about these main characters and it's been about this for 8 movies and now we're moving on. We're actually moving backwards in time to talk about something that happened
previous. Way back then.
Yeah, back to the 20s when everything else is taking place in the 90s. Like that could go sideways really easily. And the first movie I thought did all right. It was pretty good. But
we're talking about the first movie.
We're talking about the first Fantastic Beasts.
Because remember, I said the entire Wizarding World, Spencer.
Yes.
We're looking at the whole shebang, the whole enchilada.
Well, you want me to give
the
me
big hot dog, the entire Twix, the long linguine.
So you want to give? Want me to give a mini review of the first 8 movies?
No, please. No, the idea. So, like, the idea is, we've been given such a great experience with the first 8 films in this franchise.
Yes.
And the opportunity to see how those characters grow and how J.K. Rowling wrote them to be and seeing how that translated on screen. And then transitioning over into like the Fantastic Beasts world and whatnot, and how like that jump, if it still met like kind of where the other film part of the film franchise kind of left us, like,
See, that's kind of unfair to be like, you know, it has to meet this bar when you're just starting with these people. So like, at least for me, I was expecting like the first movie to be kind of like in the okay-ish realm because like the original 8 movies don't really talk about Newt at all.
Nope.
Like, he might be a footnote in someone's book bag, but, like, we're not talking
Hermione's
about
Hermione's probably mentioned him, but, I mean...
Yes. So...
But you didn't read those books.
Okay, anyway... Anyway, it takes time to, like, you know, we have to introduce all these new characters, so it's, like, it's going to take some time to get all of them to gel together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, one of the biggest expectations that I had... So this goes back to... after the first 8 films, you have, I'm not going to lie, the first 8 films, there were certain hits and misses. Not every single film hit, and it's okay. I mean, Goblet of Fire was one of those ones. That whole scene, like, I just love the memes of Dumbledore and, you know, the whole, from the translation from the book where it says, you know, Dumbledore says quietly or whispers quietly, "Did you put your name in there, Harry?" And in the movie, he practically tackles him. "Did you put your name in the goblet, Harry?"
That was a very upsetting scene from that movie. I was like, what is happening in this movie? It was insane.
But besides that, I mean, I think overall, I had a great experience with the films being translated from the books. I think it did a decent job. So you translate and you jump over to Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And here's the issue. The first film, I think, was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was entertaining, but there's just something about making this franchise that has been overtly British, and making it work in our American... slash one of the most interesting times in our nation's history, being like the teens and the 20s and whatnot.
Right.
You got, you're expecting words like Wingardium Leviosa and, you know, the whole, you know, "Did you put your name in the fire, Harry?" You know, "You're a wizard." Things like that. And you're like, you know, then it changes into like, I don't remember in the first film ever hearing any of the Americans actually say a spell.
That's because, like, by movie 8, we're just like, oh, like, mental stuff.
Tony, give him a little Leviosa. Oh, That's kind of what it felt like. So they just made the compromise of being like, okay, well, we'll just have them shoot the stuff out of their wand. We won't have them do anything, you know, just to...
why are they having...
Because that's the way they sounded. Like, poor guys, like, they all sound like somebody named Tony.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't even know a Tony. I take that back. I know a Tony. He doesn't sound like that, thank God. But I think that kind of takes away from a little bit of the magic of what made Harry Potter so great. Harry Potter was incredible because it introduced all these new words to our vernacular, like mm-hmm. Wingardium Leviosa and the, you know, all these different, you know, Expelliarmus and all these other types of spells. And it added a richness to that lore that we had read about, but now we could see and we could live, like watch it, you know, play out.
Right.
And then you transition it over to the States. And I mean, let's just be honest. The first thing you see is you see a large bumbling American who's trying to make his way into a bank. I'm like, that's American. All right.
Yeah. It's real unfortunate because I'm going to be honest. Like, to me, the American version of the Wizarding World is kind of depressing.
It really is.
Because, like, instead of, like, you know, Muggles, everyone's called a Muggle who doesn't have any magical powers.
Which, I mean, that's a cute name. I mean, if I didn't know any better and someone's like, oh, you're just a precious Muggle, I'm like, I'll take it. I'm like, oh, thanks. But, like, what they call people in America, I'm like, what'd you say?
The No-Mage or what? Something like that. Like, but also at the same time, it's weird. I hate that name. But it's also something I could see people in America saying because it's so on the nose.
I created it first.
Oh my god!
I made it huge.
Stop.
We're going to take all these non-mags. We're going to build a magical wall. It'll be huge.
Yeah, see, the problem with, oh my gosh, with Magusa and like everything that's attached to America is that it brings up for me.
I literally just was like, what the heck is a Magusa?
That's how you say it, right?
I don't know.
The Magical Congress.
The people.
The Magical Congress of the United States of America.
Whatever.
Magusa.
The American Ministry.
No, okay, also, like, we need to get into that later, but that was a bit confusing. But anyway, Magusa, like, that is such
it really sounds like a bad wrestler's name. And in this corner, Magusa! Sorry.
Like, okay, that's the problem with the American version, though. It's that it's very actual America, and it makes me sad. Because I don't want to have, like, we're terrible at naming things sometimes in America.
We are. And we really are.
I was kind of hoping the American version of the Wizarding World would be better than the actual us, but apparently not.
Nope. Insert heavy sigh. So, kind of going back to my expectations, like, so there was so many levels of expectations that I had already set, and then by the time the film came out and we got to see it, it had its high points. I'm not going to lie. There were some really great points in the film that I was like, oh, that's really cool. That's awesome. I like that. That's fun. And then there were some points where, like, no, why does Ron Perlman have to be in this? You know, things like that. I just. So, with this film, the fact that we were going back to Hogwarts, that we were getting Albus Dumbledore back into the fray, we were going to get back to England or London or wherever the Ministry of whatever was at, you know, get back to some normalcy.
Yeah.
We were going back to all that, and we were going to actually kind of go back to what was so great about the franchise. Yeah.
Mm.
Make the Wizarding World great again.
No, you didn't have to.
We're going to make it great again.
Oh, my god!
It'll be huge.
This is what happens when Chad
we're going to build a wall.
Here. We just have
to build a wall.
Oh.
We're going to drain the magical swamp.
Oh, my god, stop. I can't take this.
So, with our expectations set, let's go ahead and jump right in. And I think the first thing to say about the film, it I don't know. I mean, the film itself was fun. It was beautiful, but there were a lot of things that were happening in this movie that I think needs like a second viewing. Like if you're trying to convey a film and you're wanting people to actually enjoy it and really see it, it shouldn't take 2 to 3 viewings for people to really grasp what you're trying to get across. And I think this film just kind of had a little bit of a trouble in that area for it. Obviously, we're reintroduced to a lot of those main characters that we remember from the first film with Eddie Redmayne and Elizabeth Waterston. And you got Ezra Miller back reprising his role. And, of course, Mr. Johnny Depp reprising his 10-second role at the end of the first film. I think having them come back, Eddie Redmayne just happens to be like just one of those types of actors who really is pretty flexible. Like I've seen him in other films. I mean, he was in The Danish Girl a few years back. He was in the biopic of the genius who passed in the wheelchair.
Stephen Hawking?
Stephen Hawking.
Okay.
The biopic that was on him, sorry. Well, sure as heck wasn't going to say Neil deGrasse Tyson. but you have Eddie Redmayne, who's just a stellar performer. And I think it's safe to say that, like, Eddie Redmayne knows the character well enough. It's like, it almost seems like seamless for him just to kind of operate in that format and just be that type of person. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, no, I totally agree with you. There is actually a section of the movie where they go back in time where they're talking about a story back when Newt was at school. And the kid who had to basically act like Eddie Redmayne was did an okay job. But it just made me realize, like, how good an actor Eddie Redmayne is.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Like I said, we also get Elizabeth Waterston, who comes back, whom I don't know if it's the way the character is being played or if maybe she's just, I don't know, she's tired of this version of the film too, but she seemed very rigid in this movie. Like, she seemed very like, yes, I will go this way. Yes, please, Mr. Scamander, stay there. I don't know. Was it just me? Did you get any of those kinds of vibes?
No, I got that exactly. And that's because she's under a whole lot of like misconceptions about what's actually happening, that she's just all tensed up and she just needs to relax. That's the character's problem, though, not her, because she seemed to be fine in the first movie. So I don't see why she would have a big problem now.
I don't know.
Unless she just forgot who her character was.
The other characters that we get a chance to see, we are obviously revisited with Ezra Miller's character, Credence, whom in the first film seems more like more of a very jolted and kind of odd looking individual.
It was mostly his haircut.
It really was. That haircut was really scary in the first film,
and they got rid of it, and that fixed so much with this.
That's like. Like, oh my gosh, has he grown? Has he gotten older? Like, no, it was just a year ago. This particular film, so the first film makes him look like he's nuts. Like, he took a bowl, put it on his head. Like, you hear the term bowl cut.
That's a bowl cut.
That is a legitimate bowl cut.
Yeah.
Like, you just put it on his head and then just shave everything around it. But now he looks like he's traveled, like he figured out how to get a decent haircut. It's really interesting. He has a very unique companion. It's a woman who happens to, what they call it?
What she has? Because I don't remember what that's
Maledictus
called.
Or something?
Yeah, it's something magical sounding like that.
Either way, the actress is named Claudia Kim, but she actually can turn into a snake.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you see her turn into a snake like once or twice throughout the film, and it's pretty interesting, but she doesn't have many speaking lines in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But she is there as his companion. We're also reintroduced to the Jacob and Queenie dynamic.
Right.
Which Queenie seems more off her rocker in this one than in the first one. It just, I don't know, like her whole demeanor seemed more frantic. Like in the first film, she seemed more well put together because she could hear things and she knew things. And I don't know.
Yeah, like the whole Queenie thing in this movie actually was really sad because Jacob and Queenie were one of the things I liked the most about the first movie because I thought they kind of worked really well together. But in this movie, like, it's like she learned something horrible, except she didn't, and something's just bothering her. But like, there's like a missing character motivation in there that I can't see for some reason, and I don't know what's going on with her.
There's an interesting scene with her too as well that I thought, well, that's just stupid. So you think New York and you think, okay, busy, bustling, crazy town of people.
Yeah, that was weird.
And so you would think she's used to like all the people being around. So I totally got Man of Steel vibes, and I'm like, oh, you know, my father taught me to hone my powers and blah 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 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what I was thinking with this one, because there's a scene that she has where she's kind of stuck in the middle of like foot traffic in Paris, and she starts losing it because she starts like going nuts, and she ends up falling into a heap, like a puddle of mess, trying to gather her wits, and she's hearing everybody, and I'm like, yeah, New York is a pretty happening city. I'm pretty sure there's a ton of people who walk through there too.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of dumb.
That was odd.
It really was. Like, I didn't think that made any sense to me. Mm-hmm. Because like, if she could handle New York, I mean, that's kind of the saying, you know, if you could handle New York, you can go anywhere kind of thing.
Yeah.
At least it wasn't a Donald Trump accent. Okay.
Oh, just with as dense as New York is,
you
like,
could go in New York. You could go anywhere. Be huge.
We're not going to have a podcast after this episode. I just know it.
If you're listening from the CIA, we'll be huge.
Yeah, like, Queenie shouldn't have had as tough of a time, even if she was upset, because I feel like she should have. She's not like a teenager. She's had plenty of time. Like
exactly. I think there should have been several instances where she could have kind of honed that particular trait and be able to like kind of pull up her bootstraps and do whatever she had to do to press through that. I feel like there had been. She should have been trained in that or something, or she should have already known how to handle that kind of situation. To kind of put it in that particular place was like, I don't believe that. No. Yeah. And like we said, Jacob is back in this. Jacob, which is played by Dan Fogler. Fogler, whatever. he's pretty consistent from his previous role, so he's actually really funny in this one. He still is the same character. He plays a great sidekick. We see more of his influence in Newt's life as opposed to the other way, where Newt kind of has the influence on him. So that's fun. Mm-hmm. It is a little disconcerting to find the fact that he's brought into London under false pretenses. But either way, you know, that was kind of interesting to kind of see that. And then we're introduced to all brand new characters. So obviously, the big announcement that came around during Comic-Con was Jude Law playing Albus Dumbledore. One of the unique things about his role, and I have to give him props for this because he does a great job. One of the things that Jude Law does really well in the character is he knows how to carry that end of the way he talks, the way the previous iterations of the character used to talk. I don't know if you've ever seen what's his name? The guy who played Albus prior to in the other films.
Michael something with a G.
Michael something with a G. You mean Richard Harris?
Oh, the first one?
The very first
one. Oh, I thought we were talking about the second one. Sorry.
No, I'm talking about the actual good one. So like when he would talk, because I really liked that actor, like,
yeah, he was good.
He was like from his role there and his role in like, you know, Gladiator and all that. The way he talks, he carries a rasp at the end of it, like he, you know, and we will go and eat treats. Like, there's that kind of, like, breathiness at the end of it, like the way he talks.
Yeah, surprisingly, I know what you're talking about.
And Jude Law does a great job of mimicking that. Like, when he's talking, it's not like a forced, like that. That was forced. Mm. But, like, the way he talks, it's like you could tell that's going to develop into that normal speech pattern. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was actually really cool for him to be able to pick that up and be able to translate how young Albus sounds in comparison to when he's going to sound as an older Albus. So that was one thing that you can kind of like jump on board in terms of like, oh, well, Jude Law does his homework. Like, that was phenomenal. I was actually really excited to see that. I'm actually, because of that, I think one of the things that really sold on me for was for his follow-up films, which we come to find out, you actually were the ones who told me. How many films do they plan to put in this whole thing?
Oh, this is going to be 5, apparently.
How many?
5.
Seriously?
That's what Warner Brothers said.
Well, Warner Brothers is going to be, shoot, making me spend money.
Yeah, I thought they were only doing 3, to be honest.
One could only hope and pray. But, like, with Richard Harris doing that and creating that connection with Jude Law, I don't know, man. Now I'm like second guessing everything, because now that there's gonna be 5, it's like, I don't know if I want to stick around that long. I mean, there was 7 books, and I stuck around for all 8 films because that last one was split into 2. But because I knew there were 7 books, there's only 1 book of Fantastic Beasts, and this isn't the, yeah, no, this is ridiculous.
Well, plus, like, that seems extraordinarily long. Yeah, it says right there on the official website that Crimes of Grindelwald is the 2nd of 5 all-new adventures in J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World. And, like, after this movie, I feel like we're almost ready for the finale. Like, you know, the end game type thing of...
Are you bringing Marvel into this?
No. Like, Endgame existed before Avengers.
Whatever.
Like, it seems like, you know, there could be a setup there to finish that in 3, but apparently we're going to get 2 others on top of that. That seems like a lot.
I don't know. The way this... So, we're kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but the fact that there's now 5 films has me rethinking this entire review. I think we're gonna have to stop this and restart it. Sorry, guys, but... No. It's just, it's one of those things where, like, so going back to Jude Law, it's really great to see him really do his homework into the character and really invest into that and to see that transition. We even got a couple of other really great cameos where we got to see Professor McGonagall as a younger woman.
Yeah, I was not expecting to see her. And I was like, how long have these people worked at this school? That's a long time.
I mean, hey, you don't get a lot of sense of what she'll become in the other films,
yeah,
when she's played by Maggie Smith. But I mean, it was still cool to get that little shout out. I'd be like, oh, hey, cool, Mrs. McGonagall, Professor McGonagall, cool. Mm. But yeah, I mean, and then so we're going from the top. Like, I think Jude Law is probably one of the ones who did a great stellar performance. Let's hit the bottom of this barrel, shall we? We kind of mentioned him at the top of this episode, and let's kind of go back to that small burning pile. Johnny Depp needs to retire. I feel like he's one of those individuals who's just taping like all of his limbs together, because like I feel like he's falling apart underneath all that makeup. Like, I feel like the man is just, he gets up like 6 hours before his day just to make sure he looks pretty enough to go out. Like, I don't know. Johnny Depp seems like he needs to figure out his life. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel bad for Johnny Depp, and I don't even know why. I look at him and I'm like, oh, you poor thing.
Yeah. After, like, all of the controversy surrounding him even being in this movie, I'm like, I don't see what we fought so hard for. We could have just replaced this with pretty much anyone.
I would have been happy going back to Colin Farrell. I'm going to be totally honest. Colin Farrell would have been perfect. Like, just give me a blonde-haired Colin Farrell and it would have been fine. I don't
even
care. It's
like the worst disguise ever.
I don't even care. It was just like a Vidal Sassoon commercial all in the backdrop. The thing is, Johnny Depp has become so it's funny. I had this conversation with a group of people the other day. Okay. We were talking about oversaturations by particular actors in the film industry. I'm going to say something that's probably not the most popular thing. And if you don't like it, you can call Spencer and tell him about it.
Or not.
I think the film industry is getting oversaturated with Ryan Reynolds. I really do think so.
Is this because of that Detective Pikachu trailer?
100% because of that Detective Pikachu thing. I'm like, this man is doing that. He's doing that Toon whatever game commercials. It's like a Toon Blast or something.
Oh,
he does all those commercials. That. He does his own gin commercials because he owns the gin company. You know, we're obviously going to see him in Deadpool. They're obviously going to do a sequel to the Hitman's Bodyguard. It's getting to a point where it's getting a little oversaturated with Ryan Reynolds. Not that he's a bad thing, but you know, too much of a bad thing can be a bad thing. I mean, too much of a good thing can be a bad thing. I think that's the same case here with Johnny Depp about 10 years ago. I think he stumbled out after doing the very first Pirates of the Caribbean movie, and somebody said, "Oh, that's cool," while he was still in character, and he's like, "I think I could do this all the time," and just kind of kept the persona going. And I mean, not that it's not funny in its own right for what it does and for what it did to that film. Like, who even knew about the Pirates of the Caribbean unless you went to Disneyland and was an avid fan? Like, unless you had ridden the rides, you really probably didn't know anything about the Pirates of the Caribbean. Johnny Depp made that work. Right. Kudos to Johnny Depp. But what happens when the ships no longer need to sail and you need to find a new form of money? Are you just going to do Johnny Depp, Pirates of the Caribbean, Jack Sparrow somewhere else?
Potentially.
Because that's what it seemed like. It seems kind of like he's hitting on a lot of those one notes that were kind of the fun parts about Jack Sparrow, just in different parts of him. And it's kind of sad because he used to be a really great performer. He used to have like an incredible filmography. And it's funny because we actually have a friend who's been on the podcast. She's a huge Jack Sparrow fan. And I know if she hears this, she's probably going to kill me. But it's okay. But it's true. Like, you look at anything that he's done, and it always seems like he's doing similar roles. Like, you look at, what was that? That Alice in Wonderland movie. Mm-hmm. And that was just really, if it's not Jack Sparrow, it's the creepy, emaciated Willy Wonka. And,
oh, gosh.
Those are usually the two that you get. And
Willy Wonka was really upsetting. He was really upset with that one.
That's an understatement of the century. But I don't know. I think Johnny Depp kind of needs to take a step back from Hollywood and kind of reevaluate like what he wants to be perceived as. Because I feel like he's just kind of, I don't know, he's kind of stuck in this like loop of characters he's already done. Hmm. I haven't seen him do anything new. I think that's the bottom line of what I'm trying to get at. I have yet to see Johnny Depp do something new.
Yeah, it's been a while since.
Yeah.
I've seen something, I'm like, wow, that's really great.
So, and it's sad because, like, I really do like Johnny Depp. Like, I think he's great. I loved him in Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. Mm-hmm. I adored him in Edward Scissorhands. Like, how can you go wrong with that?
That was amazing.
He did incredible work in, like, What's Eating Gilbert Grape. He's done so many great performances. He's done so much. And then I think something happened. Like, it's kind of like that Family Guy skit, that little funny part where he's listening to Lionel Richie and he's like, "Who hurt you? Who hurt you?" Like, I feel like that's what I got to do to Johnny Depp. I'm like, "What's up, man? What's going on?" because I just I don't want to keep seeing the same characters from this man, and I feel like people are only bringing him on and paying for him to be there because of the people that follow him, and like the crowds that he brings. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of like those actors who only get paid because of their name, or because they get top billing because they're so and so or whatnot. Like another performer that I think of like that, Channing Tatum. Channing Tatum, the majority of what he does has always been like, oh, you're not paying to see a great performance by Channing Tatum. You're coming and paying to see Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
In the film. You're not paying to see some great, like, except for like the Foxcatcher. The Foxcatcher, he was incredible in. I don't know what they did, like, as a director to kind of get that out of him, but he was phenomenal. Everything else, he was horrible. But like, I don't know, like, what do you think? Am I just kind of spouting off, or what do you think about like performers like that? Like,
I always think you're spouting off about something.
Oh, thank you. I feel so much better.
No, I think you have a point. Like you said, like, it's been a really long time since we've seen, you know, something new and good from like Johnny Depp. But like, there's something about this guy that's kind of like, in this particular movie playing Grindelwald, where I feel like I've seen like bits and pieces of what he's doing somewhere else from before. It's really odd, because like you go in and you just see him doing stuff and it's like, have you done this in this movie already? Because that's what it feels like.
Is this from another movie?
Deja vu, except it really hasn't happened before.
He's like how Michael Bay is with all his previous films. He's just recycling old stuff, old garbage, and bringing it back to this. Like, I could have swore I saw that scene in The Island, and it's in Transformers now. Like, yep, you've seen it. He's just recycling. I don't know, man. It's sad because, like, I think going back to what I was saying earlier, he's a great performer. Like, he really is. I think Johnny Depp has always been an incredible performer. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it was with him having to deal with the loss of River Phoenix. I don't know if you know that whole story, but he was there when River Phoenix, you know, passed away from an overdose. And apparently that he's never kind of recovered over from that. I don't know if that's part of it or if maybe he's just like really giving up on I don't know. But whatever the case may be, I think he kind of needs to jump out of that and kind of figure out if he still wants to do this. Because then it goes down to like this. How much do you care about your credibility in the industry? Like, are you somebody who's like, okay, when I come and I show up, I want people to see that I'm bringing my A game. I'm bringing something unique to the table. I'm not just bringing me. I'm bringing my talents and all that I can do with it. And I think we're kind of at a point with Johnny Depp where Johnny Depp's like, where did all the rum go? Johnny, you're doing a kid's movie. Oh, where did all the soda go? You know, I'm like, I'm just hoping that that's not the case. But, you know, who knows? One of the things before we kind of wind things down, one of the things that's also interesting about this film is kind of the story structure. Like the way this film flowed, there were a lot of lulls in this one, like more so than I expected.
Right.
Like it seemed like this film would ramp up and there'd be something happening and then it would kind of like slow down and you'd have this lull for a little bit. And then it would pick up and something really anxious would happen and craziness was going and stuff was popping. And then it would slow down and we're in this.
But what was weird about some of the slowdowns is that like normally like most movies will try to wave off. If it's like, oh, don't even worry about this. But this one, like it'll put like a person in a room and then incapacitate them. And you're just sitting there waiting for this person to wake up. And it's like, why would you do this? I don't understand why you would do this in this particular way.
Yeah.
Like, it's very odd. Normally, I would expect, oh, the person got away and we need to go chase after them type of lame, like, building for time. Not just literally put a person into a room and then they can't wake up for whatever reason.
100%, I agree.
Yeah, and then other parts of the movie, like too much starts happening all at once, and then it becomes just a touch hard to follow what is happening in a scene.
I know exactly what you're talking about. So the way this film, we're not going to give anything away. We're not going to give spoilers. Yeah. It's a non-spoiler review. But the way the film kind of carries through in that third act, and the way it kind of crescendos over, and you get this huge, insanely, very cinematic-looking, beautiful scene of just chaos and action and destruction, and then everything kind of subsides, and it's at a moment, and I'm literally like, huh? And it was a little kid in one of the front rows that was like, what just happened? And I'm like, yes, I was thinking it too. So it was, I'm glad that I wasn't the only one, because this little kid's just, it's just dead quiet, and this little kid's like, what just happened? And everybody starts laughing. We probably missed a few lines from that, but I, who knows? I thought that was great.
We heard the important line of that
we
child.
We did. And I think that goes back to like creating a story that has the elements of it that that make the story cohesive. Because you got to remember, who is this audience for? Mm-hmm. When the first, you know, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, or if you're American, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Yeah, I know that kind of stuff. And what? No. But like, if you look at who these books were written for, they were written for kids. Yeah. All of them were. And if you're going to start creating stories that transcend even a child's way of thinking to where they're like, wait, what's happening? What's going on? And it gets too much to a point where it's like, the kid's like, I don't really understand all this, but I'm watching because it's pretty. Like, if that's your way of marketing, I mean, you're kind of losing points here, because that's not how these books, that's not how this whole franchise is being sold.
Right.
It's a children's franchise. It's a kid's franchise. It's a young kid's franchise. You know, all those kids who want to be like Harry Potter and Hermione and Ron and, you know, and whatnot. And I think if you start adding elements to the film, if you start creating a film that's too complex to where it's like the whole storyline of this film was good until certain parts started adding to it. And it's like, wait, so what does that mean? Wait, what? There's like a whole explanation scene of somebody's bloodline. Mm. And I'm like, what the heck are they talking about? And I'm an adult, or at least my age shows. Like, and I'm trying to like catch up and be like, wait, what? Wait, hold on. Huh? And I can only imagine what's going on with kids.
Yeah. I feel like they could have made that explanation scene work just a slight bit better if they would have just explained someone else's motivations before we even got to that scene. Mm. So that way you don't have to learn about this person's motivations, this person's family line, and how this all ties into this other person.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot to handle in just one scene and kind of too much to digest.
True. And it's not to say that this film is a bust. That's not what we're saying at all. But what we're saying is, if you're creating cohesive story writing and storytelling, and you're wanting to allow the audience that has already been sold into this, that's already bought into this franchise, if you're wanting to keep them, you need to keep giving them content they can digest, content mm-hmm. that they can understand, stories that they can comprehend. And I think this film kind of stretches it a bit in terms of like the ideas that they're trying to translate, the mindsets, like the whole idea of like muggles or non-magies or whatever they're called, people who are magical and non-magical, like marrying and stuff like that, getting into that, like it kind of gets a little, you know, complex in that realm. And I don't want to say it, but it kind of feels like they're shipping Dumbledore and Grindelwald in this film, if you know what that means. Like, I'm just saying there were some vibes there that I'm like,
well, there were other things that they added and I'm like, okay, I don't remember these elements.
Yeah,
even though like JK said stuff later, like I don't remember some of this supposedly being in here.
I don't know, like I said, there's a lot that's added to this story that I know they're trying to create for the sense of the dynamic of the overall story, but it still has to work for children to understand. and comprehend and recognize that this is part of this story. This is like, if they're going to introduce that, then introduce it. Don't just tiptoe around it. Don't just make it like, because there's no story, like there's no source material to this. There's no like part two, Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald, novel released in 2012. No, there's none of that for this. Right. It's like they're literally fresh off the cuff creating stories, and there's no source material to add, you know, foundation to any of what they're reading. Like, that's why we can laugh at stuff like the whole, you know, oh, it's funny because Dumbledore whispers, you know, did you put your name in the goblet, Harry? And then in the movie, he's like, did you put your name in the... you know, we can laugh at that because we know there's source material that adds the foundation. In this element, it's like there's none of that. So we have to take whatever we see on screen as the most factual amount of truth that they're going to give us.
Right.
And I'm still confused on some of the truths that they were trying to give in this film. Like, what does that mean? What are they trying to say? What is the dynamic of that relationship? I'm interested. I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I just want to know, what are they trying to tell me? You know? And I don't know. I think that kind of confuses and gives like a bit of complexity to a story that now parents are going to have to go home and be like, should I have to talk to my kids about this? Should I have to explain them about this? Do we need to have, like, are they going to want to ask questions about this, about stuff I have no clue? This movie should come with like a how-to guide to talk to your kids. Like, okay, this means that, you know, marriage over here, and this over here means, you know, well, there's a group called PETA and they take care of it. You know, those are the kind of things that I'm thinking. And so I don't know. I mean, I may be overthinking it, but I think from a logistical standpoint, the fact remains is that the story adds a bit more complexity than what some of the Harry Potter books had. And the Harry Potter books were like practically like Encyclopedia Browns of the modern age. Like, they had some really crazy, you know, mysteries to figure out and to solve. And it was fun. But when it boiled down to it, it still was engaging to kids. This adds a lot of elements to the film and to the story that's like, I don't understand. Like, I don't know what a blood pact is. I don't know what, yeah, you know, I don't understand like things like why, you know, she can't marry him and why that's such a big deal and why that has such a large implication during the 20s and the 30s and what's going to happen. And there's like a lot of things that are going on. It's like, I don't know if kids are going to grasp that concept. Like, I get it. It's cool. But I don't know if kids are going to like gravitate to that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, like, the best idea to put, like, you know, the politics of, like, laws as, like, you know, this is what you need to learn about kids, why you should or should not marry a nomad based on where you live. Like, it's fine in England, but not in America. It's a weird, really weird setup.
Yeah. So, as we wrap this conversation up and kind of bring it back to the table, Spence, were there any other issues or any other things that you want to highlight about the film? Were there anything that you really thought stood out as a good thing or as a bad thing? Either way.
Just something I really liked. Just the opening to this movie I thought was actually pretty cool. It was a like good scene of like, you know, it's been, what, 6 months or so since like the end of the first movie, and then there's a whole chase sequence, and I thought that worked pretty well.
The chase sequence with the Thestrals.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. That's it?
Yep.
For me, so obviously Jude Law really stood out to me because I really do appreciate. I appreciate great actors whom are embodying roles that have already been embodied by other people. You take Richard Harris, who's already established himself as a stellar performer. And you look at what he's done and you've seen what he's created with that character in the very first, you know, Sorcerer's Stone. And you realize that is Dumbledore. When I think of Dumbledore, I think of Richard Harris. I think of that man. And so seeing that Jude Law went back and he researched it and he looked at it and he, you know, studied it and he essentially mirrored and mimicked it to a place where I feel comfortable to say, yeah, that's a young Richard Harris as Dumbledore. Like, that's Dumbledore at that age. I don't know, because Dumbledore is like ancient in the films and in the books. I don't know how old Jude Law is in this one, like, or what he's supposed to be.
Confusing.
It is. But I appreciate that, right? So that's one of my standout things. One of the things that I was, another thing that I was really a fan of, I really liked the way some of these these creature designs worked. Like some of the ways that they did, like the whole, there's a huge cat looking thing that is insanely cool.
Yeah, that thing was awesome.
And it was, and it's like some type of, it's like the body of a cat on stilts or something. I don't know. it was with like the tail of a kite. Like, I don't know, but it looked really cool. And only in like my wildest dreams could I have ever imagined of something like that. And it's cool to see that happen here and them create that. So I think you got to give props to whomever is like creating these things and designing them, and like, oh yeah, well, we'll make its legs like 10 feet tall and his body only 2 inches long, you know, kind of thing. Like that type of stuff, I wouldn't have ever thought, but I'm glad somebody did.
You know, that does bring up a point. Like, that is one thing I do miss from the first movie. The first movie introduced like a whole bunch of just different types of animals into like the lore. But this one only does a few because there's so much story to give them away. Plus, they're not the main focus of this movie. So it's...
You mean the main focus of the movie called Fantastic Beasts? Just putting it out there, guys. Just putting it out there.
You know, they only kept that because they're trying to keep like something to contain all these things, whatever. Despite the fact that that doesn't make any sense here.
So, coming to our conclusion, let's go ahead and give ourselves the rating. We haven't done a rating in a while, so just in case you've forgotten, Spencer, it's 0 out of 5 monocles, and does it pass or fail as a film? So let's go ahead and start with, oh, let's see who's all here at the table. Oh, Spence, go ahead.
Oh, okay, cool. There you go. I'll go first. Yeah, this movie passes for me. I think... I'll give this movie 3 monocles out of 5. There were some really wonky things and some weird pacing that kind of knocked it down a lot for me. And then just really hard to understand character motivations. But there was also some really good things, some like awesome monster creatures, some good acting by other people. So, you know, it's still worth seeing.
I have to agree. Like, it's interesting how much information the entire Harry Potter franchise gives. Like, if you think about it, the Harry Potter franchise books have been around for at least, what, 21 years, give or take. And then on top of all the books, like the Harry Potter, Sorcerer's Stone, Goblet of Fire, all those other ones, you have all the other ones that have been added to it, obviously, like Fantastic Beasts, Where to Find Them, The Beatles, Bard, you know, all those books like that, that have added to the lore. So it's interesting to see this franchise kind of branching into that. I just really hope that the films continue moving forward with a upward progress. I'm going to pass this film. I do think it was definitely an improvement from the first film. And I think there's a lot that, because of this first film, that I have to look forward to now because of the third film. I don't know if I'm looking forward to 5 films.
I know, that still seems excessive.
It does seem excessive, and I'm kind of scared now. But I am looking forward to the third one, and who knows, the third one may be good enough that I look forward to the fourth, and so on, all the way to the fifth.
It is possible.
In terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Ooh.
I give it the 0.5 because I really do think that Jude Law is really committed to this role. And I want to see, there's some elements of the storyline that I do want to see resolve in terms of Dumbledore and what you know of Dumbledore and what you know of, you know, the story between Dumbledore and Grindelwald and how that's supposed to shape out. So I'm interested in seeing that. Mostly because I want to see Jude Law beat up Johnny Depp. So,
yeah, that's going to be fun. Like, no matter how the story goes, that has to be at the end of it.
So, yeah, 3.5 monocles out of 5. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Film Philosophers. Again, let us know what you think of this film when it comes out this Friday. Do you like it? Did you not like it? Are you a fan of the Harry Potter franchise? Do you think this adds or detracts from the franchise? We want to hear you. Drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/philosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/philosophy101. We want to hear you. As we mentioned up, coming out this Friday, you got Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. You also have Instant Family starring Mark Wahlberg and Widows, which looks really good as well.
That's cool.
So, like we said, great episode. It's fun. Next week, we're going to be having Mr. Riley back, and he should be here ready to tell us his tales of adventures from the Great Yonder, a.k.a. Down Under. We'll let you figure that on your own. But this was fun, and Spencer didn't kill me and reach over this table. So, yeah, we're still good. We're still alive. So, but this was good. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
And Chad's not here, so class dismissed.